All right, strap in, everyone. Today we are going deep on a Supreme Court case. It's all about your rights, specifically your Miranda rights.
Ooh, Miranda rights. Everyone's heard that, right? You know, you have the right to remain silent.
Yeah, exactly. But this case, it asks a really tough question, like, when do you actually give up those rights? When you're talking to the police? When you're being questioned, you know.
During interrogation.
Yeah. We're digging into North Carolina v. Butler. It's from 1979. And get this, almost all the U.S. courts of appeals, they agreed on this, except one.
Interesting.
So that's how this ended up at the Supreme Court. It's fascinating.
Right. It shows you how even when the law seems settled, there can be like these little wrinkles, these complexities.
Exactly. And that's why we're here to untangle it all. We're going to look at the majority opinion, the dissent, even that concurring opinion. We got to see what's really going on, why it matters to you, and what it means for the balance between protecting our rights and making sure law enforcement can do their job.
Yeah, that balance is so tricky. In this case, it goes right to the core of that.
Absolutely. So set the scene for us. What happened in this case?
Okay, so picture this. 1976, Goldsboro, North Carolina. We've got William Butler. He's arrested for robbery. The agents, they read him his Miranda rights multiple times. But here's the thing. He refuses to sign the waiver form.
Okay. Now I'm interested. But hold on a sec. Can we remind everyone exactly what those Miranda rights are, you know, just so we're all clear?
Of course. The Miranda warnings, they spell out those basic rights you have if you're being questioned by the police. So you have the right to remain silent. You don't have to answer their questions. And this is super important. You have the right to a lawyer, someone who can be there with you during questioning, you know, making sure your rights are protected. And these, they are absolutely crucial, especially, you know, you can imagine how stressful a police interrogation can be.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's definitely not a casual chat. So back to Mr. Butler. He doesn't sign that waiver, but then what?
Well, he tells the agents, I will talk to you, but I am not signing any form. And then, get this, he makes some statements, incriminating statements.
Whoa, wait. He won't sign, but he'll talk. I mean, that's confusing, right?
And that's the million-dollar question that went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Did he actually waive his Miranda rights, even though he never said, like, I waive my rights?
Ah, so that's the key issue here. And what did the Supreme Court say?
Okay, so the majority opinion, it was written by Justice Stewart, and basically it said, you don't have to specifically say, I waive my rights for a waiver to be valid.
Really? I mean, that seems risky. Like, couldn't that be open to, you know, interpretation, misinterpretation?
You've got a point. And we'll get to those concerns for sure. But first, let's look at what the majority was thinking. Justice Stewart, he wrote, and this is a quote, an express written or oral statement of waiver is usually strong proof, but is not inevitably either necessary or sufficient.
So they're saying, even if you say the magic words, it might not be enough. And even if you don't say it, you still might be waiving your rights. How do they decide then?
Well, that's where things get a bit trickier. They said you have to look at the totality of the circumstances. You got to figure out if the person understood what was going on and if they gave up their rights willingly. So you look at everything that happened, what was said, what was done, the whole environment, you know.
So it's not about one phrase. It's more like understanding the whole picture.
Yeah.
But isn't that slippery? Like, how can you make sure that's fair?
That's a huge point. And it's what those dissenting justices were worried about. Justice Brennan and Justices Marshall and Stevens joined him. He was not comfortable with this totality of the circumstances idea. He thought it was too vague. Like, it could lead to people giving up their rights without even realizing it.
I get that. It does seem kind of risky.
Yeah.
So what did he want to do instead?
Okay, so Brennan, he wanted a clear rule, he said, and I'm quoting here, a simple prophylactic rule requiring the police to obtain an express waiver would eliminate these difficulties. So basically, he wanted the suspect to say clearly that they understand their rights and are choosing to waive them.
Simple. Did you say it or not?
Exactly. He thought that would protect people better, you know,
yeah.
Avoid all the confusion. Now, we also had Justice Blackmun. He agreed with the majority's decision, but he had some concerns about how they defined a waiver.
So even those who agreed, they still had some different perspectives.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It just shows you how complex this issue really is.
Absolutely. So we've got this split on the court. Everyone agrees Miranda rights are important, but they disagree on how to make sure those rights are really protected, you know, out there in the real world. This is not just some legal theory. This affects anyone who might end up in a situation like William Butler.
That's right. And that's why we're taking a deep dive, you know? We're looking at the details, the arguments, all the little things that matter. So you, the listener, you can be informed, you can be prepared.
You know, it's funny, this whole case is, it really makes you think about those videos you see online, right? Those police interrogations.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder that what you say can be used against you in court. Even just like casual stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. Definitely North Carolina v. Butler. It really brings that home. Like, even agreeing to talk can be seen as waiving your rights, especially if you haven't specifically said you're using them.
So thinking back to Butler, if we use this whole, like, totality of the circumstances thing, do you think he really got here about that he was giving up his rights?
Well, based on the case, it seems like the court thought his statement, you know, I will talk to you, but I am not signing any form. They thought that meant he understood and was choosing to talk. Plus, he was read his rights a bunch of times, he could read the forms, and he clearly said he wanted to talk.
But couldn't someone say that him not signing means he didn't know what he was giving up?
Right, right. That's where the whole vagueness of the standard comes in. The court doesn't want a specific script or anything. They're looking at the big picture, which means different people might see it different ways.
This also makes me think about how important it is to have a lawyer during questioning.
Mm.
Especially when it's not clear if you're waiving your rights or not.
100%. Having a lawyer there means the suspect can understand their rights and what might happen if they talk. They're there to make sure the police aren't pressuring the suspect or tricking them and, you know, to help with all the complicated legal stuff.
It's interesting to think about what might have happened if Butler had a lawyer, you know.
For sure. A lawyer could have explained things so he knew what his words meant legally. Maybe all this confusion about the waiver wouldn't have happened.
Okay, so we've talked about the main opinion and the dissenting opinions. But what about Justice Blackmun's concurrence? He voted with the majority, but it seemed like he had some issues. What were those about?
Right, so Blackmun's concurrence, it adds another layer to all of this. He voted with the majority, but he said specifically that he didn't agree with the whole, like, intentional relinquishment of a known right idea. He seemed to be saying that maybe in a police interrogation, with all the pressure it puts on people, maybe you need a different way of thinking about things.
So even though he agreed with the decision, he wasn't sure about how they defined a waiver when it came to Miranda rights.
Yeah, exactly. It shows that even the justices who agreed on the outcome, they saw things a little differently.
Wow, so one case can cause so much discussion and debate. It shows how complicated the law can be.
Definitely. And it reminds us that these legal ideas, they're not just theoretical, you know. They have real effects on people like William Butler.
So what happened after North Carolina v. Butler? Like, how did it change things legally?
Well, this case became really important for how courts decide about Miranda waivers. It made the totality of the circumstances thing the standard, which gave judges more freedom to decide if someone really understood and waived their rights.
But like we said, that also made some people worried that it would make Miranda rights weaker.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What the dissent said about things being unclear and people getting the wrong idea, that's still important today. People are still debating about how to protect individual rights while also letting law enforcement do their job.
So North Carolina v. Butler didn't end the debate. It actually made it even bigger.
Exactly. And that shows how our legal system changes over time. It keeps developing as we think about these tough questions.
It shows that the law isn't just rules on paper, right? It's about how people use those rules in real situations with real consequences.
You got it. And I think North Carolina v. Butler is a great example of that. It makes us think about how our justice system works and how we balance different important ideas.
It's definitely given us a lot to talk about today. I think the biggest thing for our listeners is understanding that even simple things like agreeing to talk to the police can have huge legal consequences.
Totally. It's really important to stay informed about legal stuff that affects our rights and to talk about how to make sure our justice system is fair for everybody.
It's interesting, right? This whole time we keep coming back to this idea of like protecting individual rights, but also letting law enforcement do their job. It seems like that's the big issue here.
Oh, absolutely. It's like a fundamental tension built right into how our legal system works. Like, on one side, you've got the Fifth Amendment, which says you can't be forced to incriminate yourself. That's where Miranda comes from, right? But then on the other side, we need law enforcement, the police, to be able to investigate, gather evidence, you know, keep people safe.
So it's like this back and forth, right? Trying to find that perfect balance where your freedom is protected, but the police can still do what they need to do.
Yeah. Exactly. And North Carolina v. Butler, it really shows you how tricky that can be. This totality of the circumstances idea, it lets judges be flexible, but But like we were talking about, it also makes things kind of subjective. You know, different judges might see the same thing in different ways.
So how do we make sure judges are applying this standard fairly? I mean, this is important stuff, right?
Yeah.
People's lives can be affected by this.
That's a really important question. And honestly, there's no easy answer. One way is through legal precedent. You know, as cases go through the courts, especially appeal courts, they help define how the law should be interpreted. So over time, we get a better understanding of what totality of the circumstances actually means.
So it's like as more cases happen, we get more clarity. The gray areas become a little less gray.
Right, exactly. But it's also important for defense lawyers, the lawyers representing the accused, to be really on top of things. You know, if they think a waiver wasn't given knowingly, they need to challenge it. And I think it's on all of us as citizens to pay attention to our legal system, to hold it accountable, and to support policies that protect our rights.
So it's not just on the courts and the lawyers. It's on all of us. We need to be informed. We need to be part of the conversation.
100%. It's a responsibility we all share to make sure the system is fair and just for everyone. Now, we've looked at all the ins and outs of this case, the different opinions, even Justice Blackmun's thoughts. But, you know, it still leaves us with some questions, wouldn't you say?
For sure. And I think one of the biggest ones is there a better way to make absolutely sure that people understand their rights?
Mm.
I mean, just reading the Miranda warning, as we've seen, it doesn't always do the trick.
Yeah. That's something to really think about. Maybe we need to look at how we give those Miranda warnings. You know, could we use clearer language, maybe even visuals? Or maybe people should have access to a lawyer before any questioning even starts.
Those are some interesting ideas. And it seems like this debate, it's going to keep going as we try to figure out that balance between individual rights and law enforcement doing what they need to do.
It definitely will. And, you know, listeners, I encourage you to keep thinking about these issues. Be critical, ask questions, and stay involved in the conversation about justice and fairness.
That's a great point. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into North Carolina v. Butler. It's been a fascinating look at Miranda rights, the law, and that tricky balance at the heart of our justice system.